وجدت شيء لا إله إلا الله never forget to say لا إله إلا الله
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamati. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and welcome, dear listeners, to Youth Station on IRIB English Radio. This is Mustafa.
And this is Asma.
We're both here today to talk about different topics. And
of course. Are you a competitive person?
No, I'm no longer a competitive person. I used to be very competitive.
Yeah, okay? But it was very difficult for me to be brought up into a competition. Even at a school, I used to say that, why are these guys fighting so hard?
I think it's part of our nature, by the way, to sort of be competitive.
But some people don't have that.
But it's to do
they
with...
They don't feel the competition.
It's to do with your ego, right? You want to feel good. And in a competition, you get to prove yourself better than others.
Yeah.
So your ego feels
Why
inflated.
Why do I have to prove myself better than others?
So that's unfortunately, you know, I would say competition has like pros and cons. It has its advantage and disadvantage. So That's one of the disadvantages, like that you just mentioned, that I feel like I must prove myself to others.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that.
I don't have to.
But there's a lot of positives, right? Don't
yes,
you think?
Because if you don't have it, you're not going to try harder.
Right. And by the way, when I started actually performing better in school, it was when I was 13 years old. One of my classmates told me, hey, Mustafa, you can never be number one in the class. Okay. So I was like, just to prove him,
wrong.
I can be number
just
one.
To
he
prove
has to prove
wrong.
This guy wrong. I did become number one in the class. And since then, I've been doing really well academically. Okay.
So it had a great impact on you.
It had a great impact on me. And
yeah.
I actually went to a really, really competitive school. It was an all-boys school back in our country. But it was healthy in the sense that it allowed me to work harder. It motivated me.
Yeah.
But the disadvantage was that it comes with a lot of ego in it. And you have to be able to control that. I don't know how to do that.
Yes, you know, it would improve your ego. Then whatever your ego wants, you have to fit it. I was just thinking about that guy who said that thing to you.
We became friends later on. When he said this to me, we weren't...
When you became a part of their community.
See, when you're 13 years old, I guess it's different when... I don't know how different it is for girls, but when you're a 13-year-old guy, everything is about proving yourself. Everything is about proving yourself to be better than the other guy.
Yeah, well, girls always try that.
That's where it becomes harmful to us, you know, when we make it about our ego. When we make it about we have to prove ourselves to be better than others. In fact, that's what I guess Iblis's problem was with Hazrat Adam, is that he wanted to show that he was better, right?
Yeah.
Even now he's competing with us, right? He's trying to...
Yeah. And a lot of the stories comes out of competition, like the story of Abel and his brother, his fight with his brother for the sacrifice, who's going to offer the better sacrifice. So we even have the trace of that in
Prophet Yusuf's
brothers
were competing, you know. So
so if we don't try to prove ourselves to other people, we won't get into that trap.
So you have to... I think everything comes with pros and cons, right?
Yes.
And we have to know how best to manage those pros and cons.
And not to get into an extreme point.
Yeah. And it's the same with competition, right? For example, competitive sports are very good, right? Even Ayatollah Khamenei, for example, in his speeches has encouraged, you know, he's talked so much about sports. He's always like praising like athletes who are doing well in sports.
Yeah.
So there's nothing, we're not against it, right? We're not saying that there shouldn't be competition. There definitely needs to be competition. We can't remove that from society.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you know, what do you think would happen if businesses weren't competing with each other?
They would never grow.
right? A business, they won't provide better services. Yeah. They won't
develop into betterment.
So we definitely need it. It's just a matter of removing sort of the negatives of it. Yeah,
the negative parts.
Yeah,
like, for example, even in academic places, if you're not competing with others, then again, there wouldn't be any evolving in the process.
Yeah. I mean, in my school, they used to announce all the rankings, like who's the first, second, third.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell you nowadays, a lot of schools, they've completely removed rankings from schools.
This is a very good job.
You think so?
Yeah, it's very good.
Do Iranian schools have rankings?
Yeah, they used to have, about right now, I don't know. But even still, they have that. And they would honor the guys who've got the best scores. And then the others are just going to look at them. I don't like that.
Because I went to a really competitive school. I don't know how this new model is. The new model, I would say one good thing in that is maybe they're focusing more on learning. Right?
Which is better.
It is better. When you're focusing only on rankings, then a lot of times people don't focus on learning. All they care about is grades, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I used to see a lot of these people who get the best scores, but they did not learn things. Their scores was just a mere fact of their memorization.
Right.
They didn't go for the ideas that they were learning about. They were just memorizing things.
Yeah.
So I guess it's the best time for us to go for a break.
I was just about to say that. Let's go for a break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, this is Youth Station again. I'm Asma, along with Brother Mustafa. We're just talking about competition, the pros and cons. And everybody, whenever we say the word competition, everybody would remember school. I am sure of that, 100%, because the first time we'll learn to be competitive is when we're at a school.
Well, it's a big part of growing up.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think you can remove it from, like, children. Like,
but, you know, if we go towards learning with no competition, I think children are going to be more productive.
I don't know about that. Why would you think that?
They would be more creative, you know, because right now I am coming to this point. Because at university, when you see the students are too much engaged about the scores and whatsoever, they lose their sense of creativity. We do not have time to think about our own ideas that could be added to these theories.
But at the same time, I think competition brings with it, for example, a source of motivation for people, right? Especially with younger kids, like they're maybe 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. Like if you remove the competition, right, between them, like they may not be as motivated to do well. Don't you think?
Well, I have the other side.
You think
of
so?
This. Yeah, I don't think so. I think like competition might be good to some extent. To some extent that I know that my works are going to be evaluated in the end of the way, not just be ignored because it's not to be considered.
Well, I think it also has a lot to do with sort of the rewards that are attached to the outcome of that competition, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're putting out rewards, that can create, for example, problems, right? But where competition can be healthy, for example, is let's say you have a class of students and you're trying to teach them math. You can create a math game and the teams compete against each other to solve problems.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, you're talking about team. I don't know about your school, but what we have in our own schools is all about individuals. Individuals are fighting against each other.
Well, it depends. I was giving an example where team competition can be healthy. Right?
Team competition, yes.
Even on an individual level, on where the outcome isn't necessarily like a big reward, but just like you're trying to encourage learning through that.
Yeah. So I guess what we're doing right now in here is just more related to educational system, which is not the purpose of our talk. What about competition in real life?
Well, I was using education as an example.
Yeah.
Right. I think it can be applied. For example,
we're just running out of time, so I just want to get to the core of our discussion. Like competition, when it happens in real life, it would lead to, as one point mentioned by me, then you can say your own point.
Yeah.
It could lead to envy, to feel envious about other people, or actually to feel greedy more, and then to try to, hurt other people.
But I think those are more individual problems, right? In the sense that you can feel envy without competition. Like, for example, if somebody has more than you, somebody has achieved more than you in life, sometimes that's the source of envy, yeah. Right? I don't think necessarily competition itself is like the core source of that problem.
No, you right? see, media would make you feel like you are in a competition. The people around
you... Yeah, but I think what needs to be addressed is the person feeling envy, not mm-hmm. like removing competition from...
No. Removing competition, yeah, yes. Yeah. We said already competition has got its benefits and also it has some... bad points in it. Even, but I'm saying one of the bad things that might come out of competition could be envy, even out of school, even in places that people are prone to competition. Like even in yeah. a family, when there are two brothers, then
right.
The family is going to compare them to each
That's
other.
That's definitely true. And like we mentioned, that even in the Prophet Yaqub's, you know, in Prophet Yusuf's case, that couldn't be avoided, right? It's not as if like, God had to give those attributes to, like, say, the Prophet Yusuf, right? God didn't say, I'm not going to give him these attributes because the brothers are going to feel jealous, yeah. right? He was like, the brothers have to correct themselves.
Yeah, they had to go through the process of development.
Yeah, it's their mistake.
It took them too long.
Yeah, it's their fault, right?
Yeah.
Even in Islam, I would say God, for example, says to us, you know, that he presents religion or religious deeds almost like with the word of business, right? He says, do business with me. Right, he yeah. uses those verses, right? Mm-hmm. When you're doing business, he says compete for good deeds yeah. amongst each other.
Yeah.
Which of you can be better in good deeds? So overall, if you were to ask me if I think, you know, competition is a good or bad thing, I would say it's a very good thing as long as we can sort of manage the negative side effects.
Well, I would say competition is not good. But then as a human being, you have to think that, okay, I have the responsibility, the duty as a human being to improve myself as much as I can, as much as my capacity allows me, not as much as the other people are asking me to be.
I feel like you can't like separate competition from motivation. Yeah. They're sort of intertwined and interlinked with each other.
Yeah.
So for me, I think competition, like I use it on my kids as a way to sort of make them do more things, right? For example, we'll have a competition of cleaning up the house. Who can like clean up like, you know, this area faster?
That's a good technique parents use, but I'm not with it.
Okay, what would you do alternatively? But are you going to sit down and tell the child, you know, cleaning is very good for you and for the environment?
No, we do cleaning all together. There's no competition over that.
Kids are not that easygoing mm-hmm. that you're going to say, hey, let's all go and clean
yes,
together.
Yes, all will do the cleaning. And then after that, for example, we'd go walking. I don't know. We'd go doing something together again.
Trust me, it's not that easy, okay?
Yeah, maybe just as a parent, I cannot be the best person who could say anything because I'm not a parent myself. But according to what I have been going through as a sibling, yeah. I'm telling you, those competitions are not going to work.
Well, I also competed a lot with my siblings as well, mm-hmm. by the way. It's not like I have two older brothers and an older sister, okay? So I was in the worst position possible, right? I was in that point of view, okay? But I found personally competition has served a positive role in my mm-hmm. life, you know, in terms of schooling, education,
yeah.
family. Yes, there have been times where it has a negative impact, but that's true with everything in life.
Exactly.
Right? I don't think there's some of the things that, for example, that you mentioned that could cause envy. I would say someone who's gaining knowledge, you could be envious of them. People become envious of people who have more knowledge than them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we really have to deal with those things on our own, not the actual, like, you're not going to tell
that
person. Not the
actual person of competition.
You're not
going to
tell them, hey,
yeah,
stop gaining knowledge because other people are becoming envious, right? Yeah.
But yeah. I love that quote that you mentioned. I would like to compete with myself. That's a better choice.
That's also what my karate coach says as well. He says that, you know, your biggest enemy is yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's also a saying from Imam Ali. He says your biggest enemy is between your shoulders, right? Yeah. And that's you.
Yeah. So I have to solve everything from within.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a better choice. So this is all the time that we have for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Until another session, I just bid you farewell from me and from Brother Mustafa. Bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ya Latif, 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 Ya Latif,
Allah, Allah, Allah. Water in the Gaza Strip.
Part 2.
I've brought you the water for washing the dishes and for domestic use. I've brought it from the sea. Use as little water as you can so that we have it for a longer time. I don't want to keep coming and going carrying water pails. Wash those dirty cups. Take out the cups. Give me that. Use less water so that it will suffice. I've brought it for you from the sea. We have no tap water here.
The volume of depleting aquifer is much more than the quantity returned. Today, through studies we did on the existing wells in the west of the Gaza city over the past 15 years, we note a sharp and not a gradual transition from light to severe salinity. The existing wells in the west of the city must be closed, and the reliance must be on new wells in the east of the city to reduce the very dangerous leak of the seawater into the dry land, especially in the northwest of Gaza Strip.
The groundwater contamination and the high proportion of salt in it are not only due to the intrusion of the seawater in the groundwater. They're also the effect of an untreated sewage flow towards the sea, which runs along the beach of Beit Lahia and Rafa from the south to the north. It adversely affects the seawater and groundwater sanitation, making it polluted and, as a result, unfit for human consumption.
Saline water is harmful to children. They become sick. The last time I stayed about 6 days at hospital with my elder son, the doctors told me that he had something more dangerous than meningitis. He was taken to the intensive care unit. Blisters had appeared on his body. The blisters are mainly caused by salt water. As you can see, the water is salty. The hair has been damaged. The boys have undergone several surgeries. The rashes are all over their bodies. There's nothing to do. We are tired.
We have a large number of diseases widespread in Gaza now. Diseases like cancers, kidney problems, and renal failure, heart and vascular problems, as well as other diseases, such as diarrhea that affect children. There are also about 5 to 6 other common diseases in the Gaza Strip. We studied the causes of these diseases. Environmental factors are directly responsible. Water is a chemical compound made up of a set of elements. We found out that the quality of water plays a major role in these diseases, and they are spread in the Gaza Strip.
The combination of raw sewage and seawater threatens the safety of recreation areas as well as the health of those who take refuge from the unreasonable heat of the area and its constant power outages in the seaside. The seawater pollution caused by the sewage has become a threat to the health of those who swim in the sea.
Some studies have demonstrated the existence of bacterial and fungal contamination in the wastewater. Studies prove such contamination in the beach deposits. They are responsible for digestive diseases, skin diseases, in addition to the diseases that result from the industrial wastewater. They contain chemical substances, which are also in the water of the beaches here.
We escape the heat. They go to the sea due to the lack of water here. I'm forced to go to the sea to shower them. Then, as you can see, use the seawater to wash my body. I endure a great deal of suffering. Blisters are all over my body. I should go to the sea. My husband says that it's polluted with sewage. Where shall I go then? We have no water to take a bath with.
If the sewage was treated, it could replenish the aquifer without causing any problem. However, these huge awkward pits are not good enough to keep such amount of sewage properly, and as a result, part of it leaks into the groundwater reservoir.
They drilled a well for us when we came to reside in this area. It is still here. They irrigate the area using the well. We used to drink its water. We asked the municipality staff if the water was contaminated. They said they had examined it and it was fine. We were surprised to see worms in the water after leaving it in a bottle for 2 or 3 days. The water was soaking with a soap-like foam once we shook the bottle. We told them we couldn't drink that contaminated water.
They drilled us a well in the Al Ouda Towers area. We drank from there. If the basins stay like that, all the residential towers will face the same situation.
The groundwater contamination has an adverse effect on the agricultural sector. Once the agricultural products used to be exported overseas from the Gaza Strip, but now the locals have hardly enough for their domestic use.
As soon as you come to Beit Hanun, you begin to smell lemon and orange up to the Rafah region. Water salinity is the major problem here. Everybody knows that citrus trees need fresh water with low rate of salinity. Citrus trees no longer grow well here because the water is salty and contains a very high degree of chloride.
Citruses used to be exported from the Gaza Strip to all over the world, with the exception of some states that were not importers. The growth and export of citruses are diminishing just because of salty water, sewage, and Israeli suction of water. For these reasons, we import citrus fruits from the occupied territories today. The agricultural land in Beit Lahia was once over 10,000 dunams. Now, due to water salinity and contamination from the east to the west and the south, the agricultural land do not exceed 4,000 dunams in Beit Lahia.
Before the water crisis in the Gaza Strip, the citizens used to buy water from the desalination plants at prices not affordable for all.
I have no money to buy fresh water, or to bathe my children with fresh water, or to cook food with fresh water. I use the tap water all the time.
Today is a great day for me because I can fill the tank with fresh water. I had not filled the tank with fresh water for about 2 months. I collected the money from my brothers. We have 3 brothers living in the same house. Each of us paid 10 to 15 shekels in order to fill the tank like this, so as my kids, brothers, nephews, and nieces will be able to shower with fresh water.
The cost of safe drinking water is high. Not all citizens can afford it for their children and others. The living situation is very difficult for the majority of the population in the Gaza Strip. In economic terms, the level of poverty is very high in the Strip. Such sources are not affordable for many citizens.
Desalination plants are a temporary solution to the crisis. The aquifers are overpumped. On the other hand, the amount of wastewater from the desalination process is huge, as it often goes to the sewers.
We have to do so because people are suffering from the lack of fresh water. How can they buy fresh water if there is no desalination station? Shall they die trying to secure water for their children or for washing? They have to use fresh water if they want to live.
Desalination plants are scattered throughout the Gaza Strip. Large amounts of water are extracted daily, half of which goes to sewers or into the ground once again. The water is salty, so they benefit from half of it. So they have to overpump water reservoirs, which leads to the depletion of the aquifer.
There is wastewater, but it can be controlled. About 25% of water can be possibly wastewater and 75% of it desalinated water. Wastewater depends on the quality of groundwater. It is difficult to take advantage of the wastewater if the groundwater is too salty.
In the Gaza Strip, as the population increases, the need for drinking water intensifies, and the challenge to find solution for this purpose gets more serious.
Solution to the water crisis in the Gaza Strip lies in 3 points that we summarize as follows. First, to set up large-scale desalination plants and to treat sewage water as much as possible to reuse in agriculture. Second, to stop or decrease the proportion of wells allocated to the agriculture sector. And third, to import water from outside.
We have an international right. We can have recourse to the international court for our rights and our share in the waters of underground reservoirs in the west and in the waters of the Jordan River.
Desalination plants must be built over the next 5 years because by 2020, the Gaza Strip will not be habitable given the current circumstances. Therefore, we must start right now and build large desalination plants in the area.
One of the most important solutions to the water crisis is to put an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. It's now an open secret that the Israeli regime steals and keeps both underground and surface water that flow into the Gaza Strip.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering a doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan.
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. We have Brother Suhail as the guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Suhail. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me in the show.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the meaning and the concept of soul or ar-ruh from the Islamic perspective. What is it made from and what does it mean when we say وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهَ مِنْ رَوْحِي. So let's first talk a little bit about the whatness of the concept of soul or a ruh.
Okay, so according to what we have in our narrations, is that the soul, nafs, ruh, they might have different names as well,
yes,
depending on where it's used, is a heavenly essence which employs the body, mm-hmm, and uses its various organs to attain its goals and purposes. So this is something that is we can define as a ruh or nafs or soul, as to what it is. And the important faculties that are required for the soul to achieve the goals in this world, there are four usage of it. There's this power of intelligence,
mm-hmm,
power of anger,
yes,
power of desire, and power of imagination. Of this, there's an Arabic term for this, but this English should be good one, which the power of intelligence are called angelic.
Yes.
The power of anger is called ferocious.
Yes.
Ghadabiyya. The power of desire is animalistic, and the power of imagination is called demonic or bahmiya.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the concept is that so before the body is born and the body is created, did this soul exist by the order of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or no, it is after the creation of the body?
So when we go to the verse, نَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي, that's when we know that it talks about when I put my soul into it, the angels would do sujood,
mm-hmm,
or the angels did sujood, you see? So with this verse, we know that the body came first, then the ruh.
Yes.
As well as the easier concept would be for everyone around in general perspective, is when someone is pregnant, we have the verse of Quran, how that takes place. And then we see once the body is formed, and after some months, you see the activities of the baby in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the activity starts after the seed is already in and the body is creation and formed. And then afterwards, you see that the soul is combined with the body.
That's all right.
Yeah. We have a hadith from Amir al-Mumineen alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
He says that surely God has characterized angels,
mm-hmm,
by intellect without sexual desires and anger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the animals with anger and desire, but without the concept of reason, intellect. He exalted man by bestowing upon him all these four qualities, for which, accordingly, if man's reason dominates desire and anger and other qualities, ferocity, he rises to the station of the angels. And if his quality, like the desire, does claim over other characteristics, then his characteristic goes below than that of the animal.
That's right.
You see?
Okay. So you mean the concept of ruh of the human beings is rather different from that of the animalistic ones. Okay.
Yeah, for they have not been given intellect.
Mm-hmm.
They use desires as the way to progress and grow. So whatever they desire, they do. So for example, if you see any animal, if it's doing anything, it's out of desire and, mm-hmm, there is no logic behind it. I mean, for the animal to think as a logic,
yes,
to go and do that thing is, yes, not there. It's an essence, a fitra. So, mm-hmm, the animals feel hungry, he goes and eats. So we have good animals like, for example, lions and others that eat on their fill,
mm-hmm,
they are full. And then we have other animals, if I'm not mistaken, it would be fox or the kind of fox family, that they would go and bite every other animal that they want, but they will not finish.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Israf type of animal and the one who eats to a complete full. Where we humans stand is Baina Bainin,
yes,
in the middle.
In the balance war.
Yeah,
right.
We have this tradition from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam that says that if you want to not fall sick, eat when you're hungry, leave when you're hungry, and go to ease yourself before you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not eat full like the lions, and we do not do israf by eating more items on the table and like leaving everything around. So we are somewhere in between. We eat just as required for our body to survive.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
And we must know that on the day of judgment, you know, and also some say in the purgatory in Barzakh, this ruh, which is combined of all your actions and deeds in this world, is going to somehow be resurrected. So the effects of your positive and negative deeds mostly are seen in your soul rather than your body, isn't it? So somehow this is the ruh, which will have a bodily format but made out of your deeds and actions in the other world. Is it so?
So what we know is that the concept of ruh and the soul is to fulfill the purpose of the hereafter, using this world as a tool of obtaining whether it is heaven or hell. You see? And that is obtained by our deeds. So in these four powers that we have, the capacity of the soul, we see that which power we work on that claim has a claim over other powers. So if it is intellect over others, then definitely, inshallah, by the will of Allah, we go to heaven mm-hmm. by the accountability of the soul.
That's right.
After a person is has passed away. Mm-hmm. We have some small quotation by Allama Tabatabai, if it is okay.
Very good.
Yeah, where he states that it is better to say when the soul is related to the body and is a dependent existent, its carrier is in the body. When the soul moved through substantial motion and became immaterial, it would be an independent existent that needs no matter and is beyond the time. So this is when the ruh of the person comes out of the body and the person dies. So that time he doesn't need the body for accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And he also adds that since the soul is a material being while it is related to the body, there is an unsolved problem to consider the related soul as a matter for the immaterial.
Mm-hmm.
They say that, I like one of the quotations from Allama Tabatabai, if I'm not mistaken. He says that when the body is weak, the soul gets much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And in that concept, we see that when we are asleep, we normally do not have control over our bodies. Sometimes we move around.
Yes.
Sometimes we see dreams that are scary. We get scared. But it's not in our control. Whatever happens is realization from something out of the body. Because my eyes are closed, my brain is trying to repair itself from the day's tiredness. And I'm able to see things,
mm-hmm.
you see. Now, whether those things are angelic, demonic, those are a different discussion.
Okay.
But just being able to view them while I'm asleep, it's something that begets the question that how can I see while my eyes are closed?
Mm-hmm.
Because I use my eyes as the tools of being able to see. So if a blind person is blind from birth, they cannot identify colors.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that, like for them, yes. colors do not make sense. They don't know, like, purple is purple the way me and you, we see it.
Yes.
You see? Till the moment he gains that sight. But a person that is dreaming is able to identify every other thing, and he can understand what is going on, but without being in the wakeful state. And he is in the sleeping state.
That's all right.
Yeah.
And by nafakhtu fiha min ruhi, it does not exactly means that that, for example, from one specific time, Allah blows, you know, the soul into the body. Is it so?
No. So we have there's this the intended meaning of I breathe into him of my spirit. It says that it's not that something is separate from God, or it was separated from God and given to human being, but rather it signifies an expression. It's a word of expression.
Yes.
And what does it mean of the origin? That the root of human soul, which is higher, which is from the higher world. It means it's not from the material world. So something that is attached to the body is not from this, what you call khaki, material world.
Yes.
But from something that is higher, from the higher realm, you would say. As it is narrated from the Prophet of God, peace be upon him, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, Allahumma salli alayhi Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, say that Allah created Adam and placed us, the Ahlul Bayt, in his loins, in his lineage.
Yes.
Due to our honor, he commanded prostration. So the prostration before Adam was servitude to Allah and respect for Adam, for we were within his loins. You see? And then afterwards we have that they say that angels protected Adam, peace be upon him, due to the divine breath, that's breathing the spirit into the body. It was due to that, not due to the physical material body that is of Hazrat Adam alayhi salam, but due to that spirit that was breathed onto Hazrat Adam, peace be upon him. And that's why we say that the angels prostrated because of that breath of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
And we, even though know that Allah's existence and his wujud, his being there, we don't even prostrate on that. You see?
That's right.
So that would be...
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Brother Suhail, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept and the meaning of a ruh. And nafakhtu fiha min ruhi. Okay? Anything missed?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban li aliyin wa husaynin wa hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Everyone has a beloved, and you, dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you. my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio. For those who seek the truth.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
We were discussing about a question where a person had asked that an 11-year-old doesn't like studying and they have to always force them to study, and this leads to arguments, so how to avoid them. And then you said about how they're limited sometimes because of the school, and sometimes a child doesn't study because they are too smart, so they feel they don't need to study. And sometimes you said that they lack concentration, so we have to work on that. And you said you're going to tell us more about that, inshallah. Yeah.
And another fact is that probably, and most probably, it happens, we nag the child. And the child depends on us to study. It's like, waking up in the morning for the prayer. If you depend on your partner, whether it be your husband, your wife, your mother, your brother, whoever it is, then even if the azan is being recited, you'll say, but I'll sleep because I know I'll be waken up. Oh. I won't go without being not waking up. Yeah. So you take it for granted. Whilst it's such a, it's not a good habit at all. You should be independent in that. In fact, test yourself in your independence, how much you can wake up yourself. In the same way, a child, if you enhance his motivation and how to, make him better study, and there are points that we are going to mention, inshallah, as we go along, so the child will himself feel like studying. You may motivate him in that way. Not that you, at the last moment, last hour, for example, of the last part of the day, homework time.
No,
it's not like that. Unfortunately, the nagging is always there whilst parents don't know how to curb this problem. And it can be done so in a better way that it leaves the child independent for a very long time. And he feels like studying. He wants to study and he studies better that way rather than being forced. When you force a child to eat, that food is not even digested properly.
Right.
And the child, will feel hungry again. You'll be surprised. I've noticed that in my own child, that when she eats without, having the appetite to eat or being forced to eat like something that she doesn't like, after maybe 2 hours, she really feels hungry for the thing she wants.
Yeah.
So this is not a good thing, to force a child to study. They won't even learn properly. They won't even retain properly. They won't even, feel like they won't even get good grades in the end. So all these are factors that prevent a child from studying. We should know that.
And I think what you said previously about, you know, the child being able to, you know, concentrate and not being able to concentrate, I feel every child has different capabilities, different ways of being better. And sometimes because we don't know what is wrong with the child, we're not able to work on that. Yeah. So I feel like what you said was very important. Once you find out what's the reason that's preventing that child from growing and from, you know, doing rushd, from reaching further in his goal, that's when you're able to do make a difference.
That's right.
But when we don't find that out, then we're just stuck in one place, you know.
So it shows that a mother needs to be so careful and have so much good knowledge about their child, right, whom you're dealing with. Sometimes, you know, parents do this mistake of quickly resorting to things like giving gifts, you know, to their children. Momentarily telling them that if you, for example, bring the best marks, then I'll maybe take you to a trip or maybe give you this so-and-so gift what you want or a surprise or something like that. So, you know, this child will probably work just for the exam.
So that's going to be their goal.
Yeah, that's going to be the goal. After he has achieved it, the study will be left aside.
Okay.
And we don't want that in our children. We want that to be a lifelong thing, right?
Yes.
We want to produce those kind of children who will work for the society, who will be beneficial for the society, who are study lovers, who are knowledge lovers, you know, in every field, especially Islam. We want to train those smart children to recruit the power for Islam. Make them work, inshallah, for Islam.
They are the pioneers.
Yes, exactly.
We're just going to take a short break, inshallah, and we'll be back for more on this after the break. Stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing.
So we resort to this. Now, this does not give a fruitful answer at all, because if you compare, for example, if a person at home, for example, a lady, she's so unorganized, she's so messy, and the husband wants her to be organized, so he brings her a gift and tells her, okay, this is your gift, but please promise me now, from now you'll be organized. So what will she do? She will be probably organized, but for how many days? Four or five days. Because this was not the motivating spirit for her. And then if you ask her, why don't you still continue the same way, she said that because nobody appreciates. So mostly if you tell a woman, for example, that how well you tidied the house, or for example, you tell her that I really appreciate that you changed the setting of the house, then she'll say somebody notices, or how you cook. Otherwise, she won't take interest. So in the same way, a person, a child who studies, if you compliment him in these kind of while studying, making study a beautiful process, a beautiful hobby, then the child will be interested. We will see how to go about doing this.
Then you have to make very innovative ideas to, you know, try and
make it interesting for him, that studying in itself is a good thing. Not that because you get something out of it.
Because usually then that's the goal, that, if you do this, then you'll get this. And then we feel like, okay, because I want to get that gift, then I should study.
It's like, you know, the concept of sawab. We think sawab, when we get, when we do something, we will get sawab.
Yeah.
That doing thing is the sawab itself.
Very true.
It makes you grow. It makes you, you know, better as a person in every way. For example, if you practice something good, in the process of practicing that only you grow.
Yeah.
You get the benefit.
And sometimes we then forget even the main goal. Like we want to
Jannah. But the Jannah is here only whilst you are improving.
And reaching that, you know, closeness to Allah.
Yes, that's right. So first of all, it's like the point to be taken into consideration to improve the studying ability of the child is to create a study atmosphere. Sometimes the house, you know, is the television is on, the radio is on, the mother is talking on the telephone, the father is in his mobile reading newspapers, the children are scattered all over with their toys.
Yeah.
This is not a studying atmosphere.
Mm.
Studying atmosphere is quiet atmosphere. Studying atmosphere is an atmosphere where the table is, you know, clean with books. And the mother is encouraging her, now it's study time.
Yeah.
For example, she doesn't even have to say that. But just to create an atmosphere that the child knows that there are books on the table. You know, his bag is there. He needs to now study. It's like 4 o'clock now. Maybe just to point out the time, that now it's time, you know, that it's getting late. In indirect ways, to create a study atmosphere, maybe make something good for him to have, like tea and cookies or something, that the child is encouraged now that they need the energy, you know, to study. So they have the energy now. So and creating a studying atmosphere is very important.
I remember when I was a child, when I would get a new stationery specifically for studying, I would feel so much more motivated. I would see that, okay, my mom has given me this compass with, you know, nice pencils, pens, and I'd feel like, okay, now I need to sit and study, you know, that motivation. That's right. So we'll just stop for another short break, and inshallah, we will continue this very interesting conversation. يا مقي الخيرات يا مقي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقي الخيرات يا مقي الخيرات
So we are back on IRIB English Radio, and we were discussing about, you know, how to encourage children to study and how to, you know, make them enjoy studying, inshallah. Yeah.
Reading skills is one important thing to create the study atmosphere. Always, you know, like a parent, if they really want to improve the child in their study skills, even a parent needs to study. Like, for example, if a mother is talking away over the telephone or chatting away with someone, then there's no atmosphere of studying. Mm. But if the mother is sitting in the, for example, in the living room with a book, then the child will see how the mother is interested in reading.
So much more encouraged.
Yeah, so much more encouraged that there's something in reading. Mm. So reading skills always have to be encouraged in children. Either you read to the child or you, you know, like you encourage them that, you know, what kind of information should be more sought for, what is necessary, you know, something to do with the child's hobbies, what the child likes. For example, if he's interested in stars, you show him the latest telescope and see what stars have, you know, for example, yet not come, yet they have died down. Or something to do with maybe biology, if the child is so interested, maybe to tell him about an organ that Allah has created that, you know, is so beautiful that, or maybe our cells that, you know, go up to maybe 60 kilometers high, a tower, and 10 times more. Things like that that are very strange for a child, and he feels like getting to know more and more. Questions,
exciting.
Yeah, exciting questions that are challenging. And there are children who love challenges more, you know. So just to give them this, you know, atmosphere of studying will make him like start it to study.
Very true, very true.
Unfortunately, sometimes we see that parents are comparing children. So-and-so, you know, he does this class and this class and you have lagged behind or things like that. That's very, very like poisonous for a child. He hates to be compared. Every child is unique. Another point we should keep in mind is give the child to prioritize what he wants to do first in his day-to-day timetable. There should be a timetable for the child not to stay idle, you know. An idle mind is a devil's workshop. So the child will think and, you know, other things that are not useful, play games and everything. Give a timetable to the child such that, and tell him to prioritize. For example, when do you want to do your homework? During the day before the sun sets.
Mm.
So he will choose, and what extracurricular activity do you want to do apart from study? So maybe he'll say, I'll, for example, play this time to this time, or I'll attend my class from this time to this time. So I have only this time to do my homework. So when children, you know, they say it out of their own mouths, they are ready to, you know, stand by it more than when you tell them that, you know, like from 4 to 5, you have to study.
They feel like they made the decision.
They made the decision and that you should give the, you know, steering wheel to them, to your child to decide. So that's very important.
But do you encourage to have like a strict timetable, or should it be like
flexible?
Yeah, like should it be flexible? Because I think at times when a child is given a very strict timetable, they get pressured and, Is that detrimental?
No, of course it is very detrimental. Flexible also we can mean that sometimes, you know, from this time to this time we do a certain act and from other times we do another act. So that same time should be fixed. Sometimes it can, you know, like be flexible. For example, 3 days a week he goes to class, so you change that timing to another time. But know that those things need to be done.
Mm.
And also, you know, encourage him that it's like something to get over with so that he can do more his other things. For example, read more, you know, read his favorite books.
Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. And we will continue this, inshallah, in the next episode. Dear audience, thank you very much for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.ir. Inshallah, until the next program, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life.